Welcome to New World Notes, hosted by Kenneth Doust. This week, journalist, essayist, and activist Chris Hedges speaks ad lib, and speaks very well indeed. I hope you'll stay tuned. Chris Hedges speaks ad lib on New World Notes today. I've been producing this show for 8 years. When I began, Chris Hedges barely registered on my radar. Other voices from the left were louder and clearer. That was then. Now, 8 years later, Noam Chomsky is still out there, actively fighting the good fight. Michael Parenti has been speaking less than he had been, though. Both of these men are now in their 80s. And since the show began, Howard Zinn has died. George Carlin has died. Gore Vidal has died. Too many fine, radical voices have been stilled. Just last night, I was reading a book of Gore Vidal's essays. The essay I was reading began by reminding us that the word radical comes from the Latin for root. A person who tries to get at the root of a problem is called a radical, often sneeringly by established power. Established power doesn't want the roots of society's problems exposed, because established power is profiting nicely from those problems. That's why our nation's phony political debates are so depressing and irrelevant. Because nobody is permitted to dig anywhere near the root of our problems. Not with all our mass media and both political parties owned and operated by the U.S. corporate oligarchy. That's not me speaking, incidentally. Gore Vidal wrote all that back in 1992. Sharp guy. Every major American institution now serves corporate power. That's why the radical imagination and radical voices are so important today, and so hard to find. That's why it was such a bummer to lose George Carlin and Howard Zinn and Gore Vidal. Who will take their place? Then, pretty much out of the blue, comes Chris Hedges. Or so it seemed to me. He's got the attitude we need, and the critical habits of mind, and the moral compass, and formal education, too. B.A. from Colgate, Master's from Harvard Divinity School. Then, 15 years' experience as a foreign correspondent for the New York Times. Spent a lot of time in war zones. A few weeks ago, New World Notes played Hedges' recent speech in Seattle called The Algebra of Revolution. That was a fine talk. If you missed it, feel free to go to our website and download a free copy. That's newworldnotes.blogspot.com. Like Michael Parenti and Noam Chomsky, Hedges is often very good at speaking impromptu, without a script. In the question and answer session that followed his Seattle talk, Hedges did just that. We'll hear some of that now. In the first part of today's program, Hedges speaks about the corruption of our judicial system, the perfidy of the banks, the irrationality of the bank bailout beginning 2008. He explores whether Obama had good intentions and failed to deliver, or was he just jiving us all along? Hedges also speaks of the propaganda from our corporate-controlled media and of the bad effects of uncontrolled corporate power. Here is Chris Hedges.
We had some really good news out of Spokane, Washington this week, where a judge ruled that three individuals that had been tortured by the U.S. government had the right to sue the government. I'm wondering if you're seeing other points of light in the legal system that you could shed some light on for us tonight.
Well, there are points of light, including there are judges that ruled after the Snowden revelations that, as Al Gore said, this was a crime against the Constitution. But the superstructure itself shuts down those individuals of conscience. I mean, there is no way to justify giving the U.S. Constitution the surrender of our privacy. It cannot be done legally. There is no way to justify under our Constitution the use of the military as a domestic police force. There is no way, I think, to justify the absurd idea that corporations are human beings and have a right to drop dark money into our elections. So I think the court system, while you can get singular individuals, the weight of the institution nullifies what they've done. I mean, the issue of privacy, I think I found the inability of our system to respond to give us back our privacy, I found quite frightening.
I wanted to address the financial terrorism from the banks. As we know, after the bailout, 8 years later, they're still rampant with fraudulent deeds. Iceland broke up the banks.
Right. Well, they put bankers in jail.
Put them in jail, because I think if we just fine them, it's another tax write-off.
Right.
So I think we have to hold them accountable and jail them.
Well, they never get fined. I mean, Goldman Sachs just paid $5 billion, which is nothing for Goldman Sachs. And actually, you know, that's kind of, if you look at the fine print, they're never going to pay $5 billion. But nobody's held accountable. I mean, Lloyd Blankfein should be in prison. Most of my students should be out of prison.
So it's like, would you break up the banks and do state banks?
Yeah, I'm with Ralph Nader. We need to nationalize the banking system.
Yeah. Thank you.
Along with public transportation, along with the utilities, private companies have no right owning water or electricity. Yeah, and you know, at the bailout in 2008, Nader said, why are we giving trillions of dollars to Citibank? Why aren't we creating public banks with our money? And why aren't these public banks renegotiating these fraudulent mortgages so that people are not forced out of their homes? This is a rational response. You know, the bailout bill of 2008 had no public support. Constituent calls were 100 to 1 against the bailout. It doesn't matter. When we sued Obama under the NDAA, they did a national poll. It had a 97% disapproval rating. But it passed anyway. Nobody wants the TPP, or at least we've seen what NAFTA does, and the TPP is NAFTA on steroids. We get it. We get trade agreements. We know what they're about. And there's an extremely good chance that as soon as these elections are over in November, these people are going to go in and pass it.
Do you think Obama ever had good intentions when he was campaigning, or do you think he knew all the bad things he's going to do when he got in?
Well, the difference between Barack Obama and George W. Bush is that George W. Bush was as stupid as he looks and clueless. And Obama, I think, was cynical. Obama is smart. He knew damn well what he was doing. He was only 2 years in the Senate. But Kucinich gave me his voting record. He said, you better read it. Because it is one corporate giveaway after another. In that sense, I don't care what they say. I mean, they spend a lot of money on public relations. I care how they vote. And one of the problems with Sanders is that, yes, he voted against the war in Iraq, but he subsequently voted for the military appropriations to keep these wars going and the money for national security. So I think Obama played us. And I think if you look at Susskind's book, or where there's kind of reporting behind the veil, that I mean, remember, he's a product of the Chicago political machine, which is one of the dirtiest machines in the country. Yeah.
Thanks.
Yeah.
I also ran a lobby organization in the 80s when Reagan was doing, during the Iran-Contra affair, Hanford, START Treaty, and we were very successful. We got what we wanted. And, you know, we had 60,000 members behind us, and I sent people week to week to week after that. But I don't even think that we can do that anymore. I really don't think that the people's voices can be heard anymore if I even set up a lobby organization to send individuals to Congress.
Right. Well, look, you make a good point, because, and this gets into the destruction of our media. Clinton, which did a lot of damage to working men and women in this country, deregulated the FCC. So we allowed roughly a half dozen corporations to buy up the airwaves, Viacom, Comcast, General Electric, Murdoch's News Corp. And at the same time, public radio and public television was destroyed and became dependent on corporate money, or grant money, which is Democratic or corporate money. So that on the 10th anniversary of the invasion of Iraq, on Morning Edition, who are they interviewing? Wolfowitz. Reverentially. So what have we learned, you know? And so as people resist, we saw this with the Iraq War. Hundreds of thousands of people marching San Francisco, not covered. Totally blocked out. And so that is a difference. In the 60s, CBS, and they would all have the cameras down in Birmingham. And it's all become about ratings. I mean, it's much more pernicious than the old newspaper empires, like the Hearst Empire, which were bad enough. He kind of gave us the Spanish-American War and the advent of American imperialism overseas. But now it's a giant corporation where news is just one of perhaps hundreds of revenue streams, and they compete against those other revenue streams. So it's all about advertising or ratings, and there's been an utter destruction, especially on the commercial media, of the news industry. So you're right. You raise a good point. It is much harder for the voice, the unapproved or unsanctioned voices of the citizenry to be heard. And that's dangerous, because the more they shut us down, I mean, you look at the Occupy movement, so you have this relatively benign, they weren't quite as revolutionary as they thought, movement that asks for very rational things, jobs, universal health care, and the state eradicates them physically. Now, a rational response would have been a jobs program, would have been healthcare, would have been a moratorium on student debt. All that would have been rational. But because corporate power is now unfettered and uncontrolled, and because they don't, as a writer in the New Yorker said, they don't live in America, they live in Richistan. They're not sitting next to you on the economy seat in Delta. They don't have any clue. And when societies disintegrate, and you can look at the Forbidden City, Versailles, they retreat into these worlds that are utterly unplugged from what's happening around them, and yet they have total power. And so they're making decisions without understanding the consequences. And that's where we are, and that's why it's dangerous. Because they have no conception. I mean, you see it, how knocked off balance they have been by this political campaign. You see it on the TV with the chattering, all the courtiers posing as television journalists. So you're right. It's harder. You're right.
But what do we do, though? I
mean, we have to get out there and just keep fighting anyway. Yeah.
Just keep going. Yeah.
Yeah.
On New World Notes, you're listening to Chris Hedges, speaking impromptu in April 2016. Hedges now discusses some familiar themes. How the Democratic Party betrayed its voters and sold out to corporate interests. How the system is incapable of internal reform. And how the only viable response we can make to this is nonviolent rebellion. Back to Chris Hedges.
Well, it wasn't quite extortion. What happened, it really rose with Clinton's understanding that if he did corporate bidding, he got corporate money. So that's how you got NAFTA. That's how you got the destruction of the welfare system. Originally, under our old welfare system, 70% of those recipients were children. That's how you get the Omnibus Crime Bill of 1994 that explodes the prison population. That's how you get the destruction of Glass-Steagall, the FCC. And by the 90s, the Democratic Party had fundraising parity with the Republicans, and when Obama ran in 2008, he got more. So basically what you had was a Democratic establishment that did have at one point a liberal wing that decided to sell itself out completely. And that's why Nader ran for president, because I think 24 pieces of major health, safety, and environmental legislation were written by Ralph Nader, but pushed through the Congress by that liberal wing of the Democratic Party that no longer exists. And that, unfortunately, now has become the system that governs. So it's, you know, it's one bird of prey with two wings.
Can we get this done without a French-like revolution?
I don't think that we can work with corporate power. I think corporate power must be destroyed or overthrown. I'll repeat that for the Homeland Security person. That's overthrown. No, I think we've reached a point where the system is incapable of internal reform. And I obviously want to see a revolutionary movement that's nonviolent. And I watched it in Eastern Europe. I mean, in the Stasi state of East Germany, which was the most efficient police state until our own. And there, it followed the classic pattern of revolutions, whereby as the demonstrations grew in Leipzig, Erich Honecker, who'd been the communist dictator for 19 years, sent down an elite paratroop division to Leipzig to shoot the crowd. And when the paratroopers got to Leipzig, the Communist Party officials in Leipzig forbade them to deploy in the streets. And Honecker was out within a week. These regimes that are this decayed, as ours is, can crumble very quickly. Once those who are tasked with employing the brute mechanisms of control will no longer do so. That's how the Russian Revolution was a non-violent. Yes, there was anarchist violence and Alexander II was assassinated, but it fundamentally fell through nonviolence. When the Petrograd bread riots happened, the Cossacks were sent in, and they refused to fire on the crowd. So the Tsar is up on the front. They shove him in the imperial rail carriage. He abdicates on a railway siding. He didn't even make it back. That is true in every revolution. So once the system is discredited. We had 500,000 people in Alexanderplatz in East Germany, 500,000 people in Wenceslas Square in Prague, and that discredited elite. And it doesn't matter how many weapons they have. The Shah of Iran had the fourth largest military in the world at the time. But once he fled, the armed forces issued a statement that they would not protect the regime. That is how revolutions happen. It gets into the Bolshevik Revolution, which, as Adam Ullmann, the great scholar of the revolution, says, was in fact a counter-revolution. The destruction of decentralized power, the Soviets, Lenin and the Bolsheviks create a paramilitary faction with the Red Guards. They go in October and violently take control and then impose a form of state capitalism. And revolutions are always susceptible to counter-revolutions. This is what happened in Romania in particular, which I also covered, where Ceausescu was overthrown. You had a few days where workers took over the factories, and then the Securitate showed up again. But we have more power than we, I think. And once we begin to exercise that power, it becomes apparent. You can see it on video, probably on YouTube, but Ceausescu would hold his annual meetings when they'd bus all the workers into the square, and it's an amazing moment in history, and he's up on the balcony with his wife, Elena, and eventually the crowd just starts booing and hissing. It was unthinkable in Romania. And you watch him in a panic, and you watch him in the microphone suddenly start offering reforms. And then he's helicoptered out. And we have that power if we use it. And it's time to use it.
So far, Chris Hedges has stayed on familiar ground. But then he addresses a subject I've never heard him talk about before. Someone asks him a question about the attempts by some pressure groups to brand all criticism of Israel as anti-Semitism. In fact, the California legislature did just that in 2012 with its notorious House Resolution 35. Hedges replies with a clear and forceful condemnation of the government of Israel, of AIPAC and similar pressure groups, and of all attacks on freedom of speech. He speaks in favor of the BDS movement, calling for boycott, divestment, and sanctions against Israel until that country's government ends its half-century-long military occupation and blockade against Palestine. I've never heard Hedges speak on the subject before, and here he's not pulling any punches.
Recently, the state of California passed Resolution 35. Are you familiar with it?
Which is it?
Resolution 35.
Right, but what is it?
Which stated that you cannot say anything negative against the state of Israel.
Oh, right.
Yeah, and especially in the academic world.
Right.
How could they possibly have passed that resolution when we do have the right to freedom of speech?
Well, we have the right of freedom of speech as long as it is set within the parameters they give us, which, as Dorothy Parker once said about Katharine Hepburn's emotional range as an actress, runs from A to B. And if you step outside those parameters, you have no voice. So what is the debate about Syria? Should we bomb them, or should we bomb them and put boots on the ground? As if those are the two options. Well, I'm a strong supporter of the BDS movement. Israel is terrified because it's taken off in Europe. Sander doesn't like me too much, and one of the reasons he doesn't like me is because right after he and every other senator voted for that AIPAC resolution when they were bombing Gaza about Israel's right to defend itself, he and I spoke in Wisconsin, and as soon as he finished, I got up and spoke about Palestine and called him and every other senator an AIPAC wind-up doll. I mean, are you really, it's like the old Soviet Union. Are you telling me there isn't one senator who opposes the saturation bombing of a people that do not have an air force, mechanized units, artillery, a navy? That's not a war. It's murder. And the Israeli government has used the mechanism that powerful entities, the gun lobby, corporations use, and that's money. They bought these people off. And if you challenge them, they will use their considerable resources to destroy you. But it's interesting, I speak to students for Justice Palestine at all sorts of universities, and invariably when I meet with them, half of them are Jewish. You know, young Jewish men and women with a conscience. And that scares Israel tremendously, and they have every right to be scared. So what they're doing is banning these movements, Northeastern, other Florida State, others, it follows a very familiar pattern where not only are the movements banned, but all of the students who are in that movement are stripped of their positions of leadership in the university. So when I was at Northeastern, I was there a week after they banned it, for putting up mock eviction notices to draw attention of the seizure of Palestinian homes by Israelis. There was a student in that group who was president of the student council. He was stripped of his position. It's nothing to do with Israel. They remove, and then they put them all on probation. But ultimately, that's going to be very counterproductive for Israel, I think. The fact that they have overreacted to BDS to such an extent shows how frightened they are. And I just spoke to about 300 BDS activists in Washington. All of my energy goes into movement. I will vote third party unless the Green Party doesn't make it on the ballot in New Jersey. Then I'll write in Edward Snowden. I'm not going to play their game. I'm not going to play their game. And the sooner large numbers of us step out and stop playing their game, the more trouble they're going to be in. Thank you.
You've been listening to Chris Hedges, Ad Lib, speaking in Seattle last April 2016. Thanks to Pirate Radio Seattle for the video recording. I have edited the audio for radio broadcast. Speaking of audio, you can find recordings of all of our shows on the web. We're at newworldnotes.blogspot.com. From Darkest Connecticut, this is Kenneth Doust, thanking you for listening to New World Notes, advising illegitimate non-carborundum, reminding you that an injury to one is an injury to all, and hoping you'll come back again next week. We started this show lamenting some radical voices we had lost. Why don't we end up with one that we still have? David Rovics.
It can happen in a moment. Sometimes it does when what could be is and what shouldn't be was. There are times when you gotta stand steady. There are other times when you gotta be ready. The window can open, it seems so wide, but you can never tell when it's gonna slam shut. One day you're a target on the firing ranges, the next day all of a sudden everything changes. When it all are coming, others have came, and then there are